lost in the shuffle of Season 8 with the cities burning, dragons dying, and new monarchs being crowned is the existential threat which started the story. The infamous words of House Stark, "Winter is coming." Their dire warning is not only about the inevitability of death, but the return of the icy White Walkers, and their attempt to bring about an endless winter known as the Long Night. Although the Whites are seen as their primary tool, the true devastation the White Walkers command is the promise of a winter without end. The Long Night was, in old Nan's words to Bran Stark, "Fear is for winter, my little lord. When the snows fall 100 feet deep and the ice wind comes howling out of the north, fear is for the Long Night, when the sun hides its face for years at a time, and little children are born and live and die, all in darkness, while the direwolves grow gaunt and hungry, and the White Walkers move through the woods." An endless winter of snow and death that would never let up and cover the planet in a frozen hell forever. However, lost in these dramatic legends is that the weather of Westeros has been swinging wildly for thousands of years between summer and winter. While not a generation-long one as old Nan claims, some winters in Westeros have lasted years at a time and led to the deaths of thousands upon thousands. It'd be easy to blame these longer winters on the White Walkers themselves, seeing as they brought the original Long Night. However, it's not just the winters that are varying. Summers can last for years as well, as the most recent summer lasted 10 years. Even more curious, the spring and fall can sometimes last several years as well. So the question is, are these unpredictable and long seasons now over with the end of the Night King and the raising of Good King Bran? In the show, the White Walkers can apparently conjure blizzards of immense strength and deadliness, and in the books, they can make it so cold that men freeze to death, as well as making weapons of ice. It seems certain that the end of these masters of cold must have some effect on the seasons, too. Over the years, fans from book clubs to Reddit to actual climate scientists have taken cracks at understanding why the seasons are so unpredictable and so long. Theories proposed have ranged from binary stars to tidal forces to cracked moons and comets. The only clear answer is George R. R. Martin has ever given on what the hell is going on with his seasons can be summarized in these two quotes. "I have people constantly writing me with science fiction theories about the seasons. It's a double star system with a black dwarf, and that would explain..." It's fantasy, man. It's magic. I am going to explain it all eventually, but it's going to be a fantasy explanation. It's not going to be a science fiction explanation. What we're looking for, then, is a fantasy explanation. Something at the magical core of his story to explain why the seasons have gone haywire for thousands of years. And not just haywire in terms of wildly longer than the seasons we know, but they're unpredictable. The Maesters of the Citadel have put in massive amounts of effort trying to accurately predict when seasons will end, yet they rarely, if ever, succeed. George has also included this passage in The World of Ice and Fire, and had Septon Barth, the character noted for being right almost all the time in the story, echo his answers he gives to fans. Septon Barth appeared to argue in a fragmentary treatise that the inconstancy of the seasons was a matter of magical art rather than trustworthy knowledge. Maester Nicholls' The Measure of Days, otherwise a laudable work containing much of use, seemed influenced by this argument. Based upon his work on the movements of stars in the firmament, Nicholls argues, unconvincingly, that the seasons might have once been of a regular length, determined solely by the way in which the globe faces the sun in its heavenly course. The notion behind seems true enough, that the lengthening and shortening of days, if more regular, would have led to more regular seasons, but he could find no evidence that that was ever the case, beyond the most ancient tales. In the year 281 AC, known as the Year of the False Spring, which coincidentally was the year Rhaegar and Lyanna met at the tourney of Harrenhal, the Maesters sent out their special white ravens declaring that winter had ended and spring had finally arrived, only to pull a whoopsie and have to recall that message when winter came crashing back down on the realm after only 2 months of spring. This incident is very reminiscent of the Greek myth of the god of the underworld Hades kidnapping his fellow god Persephone. The myth goes that Hades kidnapped Persephone and that she must stay in the underworld 3 months every year because of the pomegranate seed she ate, and during that time her mother Demeter, the goddess of nature, mourns and causes winter. Again, this is pointing to George's answer that he has a magical answer in mind for the seasons. The obvious culprit, as I mentioned before, is the White Walkers, who we have seen in the show cause enormous deadly blizzards at Hardhome and Winterfell. In the show, Jon Snow declares that it is the White Walkers directly that are bringing the coming abnormally strong winter.
And I promise you, friend, the true enemy won't wait out the storm. He brings the storm.
That just raises further questions, though. As we saw them in the show, they physically were there for the blizzards they brought with them, yet these years-long winters would happen across Westeros for thousands of years. Did the White Walkers get bored every few years and decide to create a medium-length winter to annoy the humans? A hilarious prank or quote-unquote social experiment from beyond the wall for Weirwood YouTube? And how did they cause winter to fall so far south despite being held back by the wall? If they can do that, and cause winter sometimes as long as 5 years twice since Aegon's conquest, then there doesn't seem to be much point in crossing the wall itself. While it seems certain that the White Walkers can cause some winter storms, including the Long Night, there may be something else at play creating the other seasons to run wild and with unpredictable derivations. The Walkers can likely make a winter worse or extend it, but don't seem to be at the cause of all the seasons being out of whack. For instance, starting in 288 AC, there was the 10-year-long summer. As much as the White Walkers love winter, you'd be hard-pressed to come up with a reason that they would subject themselves to 10 years straight of summer if they had the ability to make it winter at any time. Looking a bit further at the White Walkers, the lands beyond the Wall and their home is called the Lands of Always Winter, an Arctic region of endless winters. There is an opposite to that region, though. The home of the long-dead Valyrian Freehold. The peninsula the Freehold sat on was called the Lands of the Long Summer, and sported 14 volcanoes. These lands were perpetually in the grips of summer and never seeing the brutal Arctic storms that can blow out from the far north. The Lands of the Long Summer were among the most fertile and sought-after land in the known world, and served as the foundation that the Freehold and their dragons flew out from. Magic had died in the west when the doom fell on Valyria and the Lands of the Long Summer, and neither spell-forged steel, nor storm singers, nor dragons could hold it back, but Dany had always heard that the east was different. More than a name, though, the Lands of the Long Summer held something astounding. While the White Walkers bring winter storms, the Valyrians harnessed and kept the 14 volcanoes known as the 14 Flames under their magical control and prevented them from erupting with their fire mages. A handful of maesters influenced by fragments of the work of Septim Barth told that Valyria had used spells to tame the 14 flames for thousands of years, that their ceaseless hunger for slaves and wealth was as much to sustain these spells as to expand their power, and that when, at last, those spells faltered, the cataclysm became inevitable. In addition, there's been some hints that there's a connection between the Long Summers and the Freehold's primary weapons, their dragons. The third Aegon, that would be, not King Daeron's father, but the one they named Dragonsbane, or Aegon the Unlucky. He was afraid of dragons, for he'd seen his uncle's beast devour his own mother. The summers have been shorter since the last dragon died, and the winters longer and crueler. It could be a coincidence that the summers grew temporarily shorter after the end of the last dragon, but given what else we know about climate control from species, maybe it's not. It is reported that after Dany's dragons hatch, that magical abilities of fire mages across the world suddenly increase. There's some amount of magic to the wildfire the Pyromancer's Guild crafted, as well as some street performers in Qarth, that somehow make fire ladders appear in thin air. The mage was gesturing, urging the flames higher and higher with broad sweeps of his arms. As the watchers crane their necks upward, the cut purses squirm through the press, small blades hidden in their palms. They relieve the prosperous of their coin with one hand while pointing upward with the other. When the fiery ladder stood 40 feet high, the mage leapt forward and began to climb it, scrambling up hand over hand as quick as a monkey. Each rung he touched dissolved behind him, leaving no more than a wisp of silver smoke. When he reached the top, the ladder was gone. So was he. Magical control of the elements doesn't just stop with the Fire Mages and the White Walkers. There's also the infamous, and unfortunately long-dead mages of the Rhoynar, the ancestors of Queen Nymeria of Dorne. They were reputed to be able to control water and mists through their water wizards, and their last prince, Garen the Great, brought down a curse on the invading Valyrians as they destroyed his home. largest army that Essos had ever seen soon assembled at Croyaen under the command of Prince Garen. According to Beldassar, it was 250,000 strong. From the headwaters of the Rhoyne down to her many mouths, every man of fighting age took up sword and shield and made his way to the Festival City to join this great campaign. So long as that army remained beside Mother Rhoyne, the prince declared, they need not fear the dragons of Illyria. Their own water wizards would protect them against the fires of the Freehold. At Croyaen, the cage was hung from the walls so that the prince might witness the enslavement of the women and children whose fathers and brothers had died in his gallant, hopeless war. But the prince, it is said, called down a curse upon the conquerors, entreating Mother Rhoyne to avenge her children. And so, that very night, the Rhoyne flooded out of season, and with greater force than was known in living memory. A thick fog of evil humors fell, and the Valyrian conquerors began to die of grayscale. There's tales as well in the deep shadows of the past, starting with the nature god of legend, Garth Greenhand. Garth was a jolly fertility god worshipped by the first men who had the ability to make plants bloom and women become fertile. Although there are other stories, dark legends, that Garth was a death god and his life was directly tied to the seasons. In some stories, the green god dies every autumn when the trees lose their leaves, only to be reborn with the coming of spring. This version of Garth is largely forgotten. Given that the first men also worshipped the sacred old gods and their weirwood trees, which were actually the children of the forest in the skies, it's possible that Garth was actually a figure from Children of the Forest society. Garth was said to plant weirwoods, he sat on a tree throne, and had some kind of elemental control over nature, which is suggestive of what we know about the children. The children are also said to have brought down the calamity known as the Hammer of Waters on the neck or the arm of Dorne, depending on the source of the legend. Exactly what a Hammer of Waters means is relatively unknown, especially given their self-given name of the Singers of the Earth. What is clear, though, is that they have enormous magical abilities. The Children of the Forest are the creators of the White Walkers, and gave them their magical control over cold and winter and undeath. This solidifies the idea that the children themselves had some measure of control over nature as well. It adds consistency that it is not just the cold demons of the north that can influence the seasons, but also the mysterious Children of the Forest, the powerful dragon lords of Illyria, and the water wizards of the Rhoyne. It's not that only winter can be made to be elongated or controlled, it's just that it is the most dangerous, as winter is often deadly to many species. What I'm getting at here is that it isn't just the White Walkers. There's many magically inclined people, species, and civilizations that have taken the forces of nature and made them their own to command. While the walkers can bring winter with them, they probably aren't responsible for all winters and the other bizarrely stretched seasons. What may be happening instead is that the natural world has been distorted and corrupted so much over time by use of these magics that the seasons have become deformed versions of themselves. Almost like the modern idea of pollution, in which overuse of natural resources eventually changes the landscape and changes the climate. But we're talking about magic, not the real world, so what could be happening here? What mechanism would enable distortion of the flow of nature itself? There's a curious line from the books in how Melisandre perceives the wall, in particular how it makes her feel stronger. "You are wrong. I have dreamed of your wall, Jon Snow. Great was the lore that raised it, and great the spells locked beneath its ice. We walk beneath one of the hinges of the world." Melisandre gazed up at it, her breath a warm, moist cloud in the air. The carved chest that she had brought across the narrow sea was more than three quarters empty now, and while Melisandre had the knowledge to make more powders, she lacked many rare ingredients. "My spells should suffice." She was stronger at the wall. Stronger ever than in a shot. Her every word and gesture was more potent, and she could do things that she had never done before. "Such shadows as I bring forth here will be terrible, and no creature of the dark will stand before them." With such sorceries at her command, she should soon have no more need the feeble tricks of alchemists and pyromancers. We know that Melisandre is one of the few actually magical figures in the story, with her glamours and her shadow babies and her ability to see in the flames. And it's from her perspective that we're being told, for a fact, that the wall somehow increases magical ability. That it acts as some kind of pool of power, a hinge of the world as she calls it. What this means is that it's possible for the magic of that world to be stronger in some places and gather, and inversely, weaker in other places or be more scarce. This could be a reference to the common fantasy trope of magical fonts or ley lines, where magical forces collect and move around in nature. If you wanted to visualize what this is like, ley lines are like invisible lines that cross the world made of magic, and where they meet, or they cross, they create pools of power. The more lines that cross at any point, the stronger the magic is in that area. In this case, Melisandre feeling her powers growing, being near the wall, indicates that there may be a massive pool or lake of energy in and around the wall, with many ley lines converging, which could be keeping the megastructure from collapsing for thousands of years. Perhaps the wall was built there in particular because the magic is so strong. What this means for our question about seasons is that often in fiction, when these natural flows of magic and energy are disrupted, diverted, or abused, the world and the land itself begins to suffer. Where there used to be thriving life and beauty like something out of an elven kingdom in Lord of the Rings, it instead fades and withers. The life drains out along with the fonts of magic. Typically in fiction, the culprit is a massive overuse of magic or spells or some kind of harvesting of it. You can think of it in terms of modern practices like fracking or drilling for oil or mining for minerals, where a precious resource is being extracted, leaving the natural landscape scarred and broken. This may be backed up with the idea in my Whisper Jewels video that magical forces and spells can be contained in crystals and objects. The creation of magical objects like Valyrian steel swords and dragon glass may be trapping some of that magic in a physical space to be stored for later, almost like a battery. Which, in a way, makes things like glass candles, the magical objects that allow people to see beyond and sometimes into dreams, more like barrels of oil than fantastical crystalline structures. And then we can look at the world George has created, and his stories of wizards, mages, impossible magical places like Valyria, the Rhoynar on their great river, the Wall, the sprawling metropolises of Ashai and Karth, the White Walkers raising tens of thousands of corpses into their service, the Valyrian shaping rock like it was putty, forcing volcanoes to not explode, experimenting in blood magic, riding dragons and delving deep into the earth, the children calling down cataclysms on the land itself, and creating the White Walkers. Maybe it had just all become too much. The wells of magic around the world constantly being run dry until the systems of nature started malfunctioning. A wound in the world that has never been allowed to heal. Instead, the scabbed rip open over and over. Perhaps now, with the ending of the White Walkers, the children pretty much dead, and the last of the Valyrian Empire burning out with Daenerys and Jon, and the wall destroyed, the natural world may be allowed to heal at long last. The seasons may slowly go back to their original form. Well, for now anyway. Magic is less fantasy and more like a fundamental part of nature, something like electricity or gravity. Magic will always be available to those who want to find a way to use it, which we know has happened before. In the ancient past, the great empire of the Dawn rose and fell, then others stepped up into the void left by them, notably the Valyrians. And with a new sorcerer king of Westeros ruling, who derives his power from the very same trees that Garth the Green planted, perhaps balance can be restored for a time. A ruler who has a longer view and a more balanced view of how the world should work. Maybe there'll be enough time to heal before that inevitable turn of the wheel happens again, and the long seasons will come to an end. Not forever, though. A new empire of dragon lords can rise from the dust. The White Walkers were made once. They can be made again. The unbalanced seasons are hopefully at an end for now, but the Starks are always right eventually. The long night fell twice, and it can happen again. Winter is coming. Thank you very much for watching this video. If you liked it, make sure to subscribe, comment, share, hit that little bell button so you get notifications of future videos, and slam that like button. Today's video is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering you all a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial. If you've not gotten into the books Game of Thrones is based on, this is a great chance to do it. Just go to audibletrial.com/joemagician and browse the unmatched selection of audiobooks. Download a free title today on me, like A Game of Thrones, and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/joemagician today. Also, coming up on Halloween night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join my Maester Monthly co-host Bookshelf Stud Live on my channel, where we'll be delving down into the strange and twisted hallways of the House of the Undying. Get your shade of the evening and take a walk into the haunted hallways of the Undying Halloween night. Also, if you like this content and want to see more, consider supporting me at patreon.com/joemagician, where you can get access to video and audio early, the artwork from these videos, your name read out at the end and put in the descriptions, and more. Speaking of which, let's list some of those fine people that have signed up. Thank you to my Blue Wizard patrons, Anthony P., Sanrixian, Steven Stark, and Sue the Fury. And my Archmaester level patrons, Brendan Beefish, Aaron M., KCD, Lady Shar, Leathery Wings, Maester Mary, Marion, Nessie the Questing Beast, Jeff and Emmett from Nauticast, Johan, and Zombie Jesus. Thank you all very much for watching. Hope to see you Halloween night.